Welcome to the Man in the Pew Show. I'm your host, Phil Mershon. This is the show for everyday men who want to follow Jesus every day, at work, at home, at church, and at play. I'm joined today by my friend Joel Bogus, and we're going to talk about how God rescued him from a near-death experience and now how God uses him to bring encouragement and hope to others who are afraid to step out. I hope you'll find great encouragement from it. Before we get to the interview, I'd like to read a verse for you. It comes from Matthew chapter 10. Starting in verse 28, it says, "Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both body and soul in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows." God knows your name. He knows how many hairs are on your head, or in my case, how many hairs are not on my head. But he knows us. We have nothing to fear in life knowing that God is for us. He said, "Greater is he who's in you than he who is in the world." I'm not sure what you're facing today or this week in your life, what kind of scary mountains are ahead of you, what kind of challenges are out there. But I think today's episode is going to encourage you that God is with you even when you can't defend yourself. And maybe God will use you to stand up for, to give blood for somebody else who can't stand for themselves. I hope you find great encouragement through this episode, and so let's go now to this week's episode with Joel Bogus. Well, I am very excited to have with me today Joel Bogus. Joel is not only a friend, but he's also an author of the book Finding Your Voice, the co-host of The Relaunch Show. He's a life coach and a keynote speaker on the theme Never Give Up. So, Joel, welcome to the show.
Phil, this is going to be so much fun. I've been looking forward to this interview. And, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I started back in traditional radio, gosh, a long time ago. It's been 28 years. And with all of that radio experience, plus, you know, the podcasting experience, because I've been doing my show for quite some time, too, I still don't take for granted these invitations to be on people's shows. And I realize that there are a lot of places that your audience could be tuning in for inspirational and faith-filled messages. And they have made the decision and have taken the action to tune into this show. And Phil, I know you, like me, take that very personally.
We do. I do, for sure. And I appreciate, number one, that you're willing to give your time and share your story. And frankly, that's where I'd like to start, is digging into a little bit of your story. I know you've talked about it some in your book and on your podcast, but I think for our audience, it'd be really helpful to give a little backdrop of a couple of the events that have shaped you and then how you came to faith. And if you don't mind talking about the accident you had when you were five and then some of what you went through as a teenager that led one day to your faith, it'd be really helpful to get some of that backdrop as we talk about what you're doing today a bit later in the show.
You bet. Delighted to start. Would you like me to just go ahead and kind of start?
Let's just start. Let you talk for a little while.
Okay, very good. Again, thank you for the opportunity. And January 29th, it was a Sunday afternoon, myself, my dad, and some family friends were on a nature hike in the Texas Hill Country. And later that afternoon, myself and two of the older kids kind of drifted away from the pack, and we ended up scaling a small hill. And Phil, running parallel to that hill was what looked like, must have looked like to me, a jungle gym. And I did what any five-year-old boy would do. I climbed to the top, ran to the middle, and laid down face down on my stomach, and I called to my dad below. But the thing was, this wasn't a set of monkey bars. This was actually a train bridge that stretched over a wide gorge. And when the train approached, my dad scrambled as fast as he could to get up that hill to reach his son. But by the time that he got there, it was too late. And I had fallen 30 feet and was laying motionless on the ground. And my dad ran as fast as he could, of course, down the hill, knelt down next to me, grabbed my arm, hoping, praying to find a pulse. And luckily he did. And that fall resulted in 3 skull fractures, a coma, and so much blood loss that by the time the rescue team found us, Texas Hill Country, no cell phone, no GPS, 43 years ago, they weren't even able to start an IV on my little 5-year-old arm because all the blood vessels had collapsed. But through heroic medical and, of course, divine intervention, we were able to make that 45-minute drive to downtown San Antonio, where I would spend the next 4 weeks of my life fighting for it at Santa Rosa Children's Hospital in room 401. And on March 5th, 1975, that is the day that a miracle happened. I opened my eyes and I called out to my grandfather, "Papa," and my family answered. And the recovery started right there. No question in the room, God and Christ was with myself and thankfully my family throughout that whole experience.
I believe you've told me that some of your family were praying for you in that moment. Were you aware of it at that moment, or is it later looking back on it that you can see God at work at that moment?
Boy, that's a very interesting question. And I don't know exactly who was praying on and at what frequency, but I do know that there was a vigil within my family and also within my family's friends. And there were shout outs going, you know, in the church body that my families were attending. Unfortunately, my parents weren't, mom and dad, but my grandparents were very engaged. And let me sum it up this way. You're talking about involvement. I still have the list, Phil, of all of the people who donated blood on my behalf, because remember, there was serious blood loss. And by the time we got to the hospital, they were short on blood. So that call went out immediately and people heard the call. God was making it. And they rushed to the hospital, and that hospital was replenished in abundant supply.
Wow. How many people do you have on your list that gave blood?
I don't know off the top of my head. I just know that it has, somebody wrote the signature. I'm sorry, not the signature, but somebody wrote out every person, or it's a pretty good count. And I don't remember, Phil, but you can barely make out some of the names, but I recognize some of them, and you know, they're still with us. Some of them are.
Yeah, there's so many things that happen there that are cool, that shape who you are. I heard you say, as you told that story, that you fought, that your little body was fighting during that time. And I know that you're a fighter. I know in your story that you talked about picking up martial arts, and then later in life you've picked up other forms of fighting. And I would say even now you're fighting for the hearts and the hope of men and women, that they would believe that they have what it takes and they shouldn't give up because their dreams are worth pursuing. Can you see that trace through your life and reading, going back to that moment?
That's another wonderful and very interesting question. And absolutely, I can. I think it is because a lot of things in my life, as I was recovering, I had to learn or relearn in my life. So I couldn't give up. Well, I guess I could, but I didn't. And I remember just a real quick story. 2 weeks after I woke up out of my coma, I was finally able to go home. And I don't remember the exact details of what happened in the first few days of my recovery. But when I finally was able to get home, one of the first memories I have is of my grandmother. And we were standing in the alleyway between her red house and the white house that was behind her. And the sun was out. It was warm that day. And I was wearing my newly fitted glasses, a t-shirt, shorts, and a brand new pair of sneakers. And as I put one foot in front of the other, Phil, Mimi was standing behind me, and she had her little index finger through the back belt loop of my shorts, and she was stabilizing me, helping me learn how to balance, helping me learn how to walk again. And that was the extent of some of the things that I had to just keep working on, my balance, being guided. And that has served me to always look for guidance, look to teachers for guidance, look to mentors for guidance, look to God for guidance. And throughout my high school and young adulthood, not only have I kind of instilled some of those ideas and principles, but what I found is that I'm instilling them in other people as well. And that's just part of who I am. So it's kind of woven into my DNA. Blessed to be a blessing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. The other thing you talked about, which I find fascinating, is that here are all these people who gave their blood for you, and that your life literally is here because others gave their lifeblood for you. And I can only imagine that when you came to the point of hearing of what Christ did for you and shedding his own blood for you, that that has a very personal connection for you. I wonder, in light of that, when did you come to faith, and what were kind of the circumstances that brought you to that realization that while you're a fighter, you needed someone bigger fighting for you who is never going to lose?
Now, I love telling this story. My aunt, Aunt Olinda, my father's older sister, she's still with us, thank God. She had me baptized when I was in a coma. And that was probably one of the first experiences in my coming of faith. And later in life, I gave my life back to Christ after I kind of made a mess of it, like, you know, many people do as they're growing up, teenage years and early 20s. And I tried again, but I never gave up. And, you know, that's the kind of God that we serve. A God that will never give up as long as you never give up. And I'm so glad you made the connection there from people giving blood to me for life and Christ giving his blood to us for life. Because I'll be honest with you, Phil, I never really made that connection, blood to blood, like you just did. And I'm glad you did, because I'm going to be able to communicate that, you know, when I'm on stage and when I'm speaking with audiences that need and expect to hear that kind of a transformative message. So thank you for that.
Well, and I never thought of it until you said it, but it's very powerful to me, because I don't know how many people I know who have given blood specifically for a person. You know, I've given blood at the blood donation centers when I could. I've got a liver issue where they won't accept it anymore, but I've did my part when I could, but I never knew who I was giving it for. So to think that these people knew they were giving it for a little boy whose life was literally on the line, you know, I think that's powerful. But then to be able to turn it around and say, Jesus, when he was on the cross, he was thinking about you. He was thinking about me, and he was thinking about every guy listening to this show when he laid out his arms and said, Father, your will, not mine, and it is finished. He was thinking about us, and he allowed his blood to be drained for us. And it's an amazing thing to be able to make that so personal, and then to turn around and say, God's made us in a place where we can give ourselves to others. And not that we need to lay our lives down, but are we willing to? And are we willing to give up some of our lifeblood, some of our, you know, sweat, some of our hard work for that person that we're hearing about who is in a really rough place? I think it's just a great inspirational reminder for me.
You know what I think? I think you just wrote my next speech. Thank you, Phil.
Well,
I'll take content however I can get it. If it's killer content that speaks the truth, I'm going to use it. So consider yourself hacked.
I love it. I hope to hear it someday in person. So
So it was during those days your aunt was involved. I know you had a rough patch during your teenage years where you were, I believe there were drugs involved and some other things. Yep. But when did you turn a corner to say, I want to start giving myself to other people by helping them come out of maybe their valleys and live lives that are full of purpose and meaning and impact? What happened?
Sure. Gosh, another powerful story, or a great story that I get to tell. One of the things that my parents enrolled me in was martial arts training. You know what? And I needed the coordination. I needed the motor skills just in my own development. And you know what? I got kind of good at it. And I ended up teaching little kids, you know, martial arts, kicking, punching, spinning, things of that nature. And I really enjoyed it. And then I started teaching teenagers and then adults. And then when I graduated from high school, I moved on to college. And you know what? I took a job, not as a martial arts instructor, but as a swimming instructor. And I was teaching people and kids and teenagers not how to punch and kick, but how to swim, how to do a stroke, how to blow bubbles, things of that nature. Different mechanics, but I was still teaching people, little people in those situations, confidence and focus and believing in themselves and things of that nature. And when I got out of college, I moved on and worked as a personal trainer, finished my master's degree with a counselor, and I helped people in different ways develop themselves, clarity, confidence, direction, things of that nature. And in a few days, I'll turn 48. And when you look back over my life, that's what I've always been doing. I've always been helping people learn how to believe in themselves, how to trust, and how to go all in, how to never give up. And it's just always been a part of me. But I think it was because it relates so much to what was me. You know, lying there in that bed, sitting upright, you know, learning how to get on my feet again at age 6.
I find myself wondering, you know, you're in a place where you're encouraging and coaching and training people, whether it's physically or now I think you're more involved in trying to mentally, spiritually, emotionally help people be conquerors, be fighters, be those who persevere. What are the things that you see, particularly among the men that you work with, what are the things that you see as common threats, as common obstacles that you have to help people overcome?
I think it's fear. It's fear of failure. It's fear of success. It's fear of not looking good or not looking like you're right. And those are huge things that can block you from success. And I know that very, very well because, you know, I went through that as well. And when I was in school, I did stay up with my class in spite of that injury and the recovery. So I was right there with my peers, but you know what? I was often at the bottom of that class. And with some of the challenges in my recovery, there was a lot of teasing, a lot of taunting, and a lot of bullying too. And one of the things that I did as a schoolboy, pretty much what any school kid would do, is I developed a way to cope through the insecurity and the pain. And the way I did it is I convinced myself, I tricked my mind into believing that the only way anyone would ever accept me is if I masked who I really was, and I made it my mission to prove my value and my worth. And the unhealthy way that came out of me, Phil, is that I thought that I needed to prove that I was right at all costs. And it took me a long time to kind of get a clue that short-term desire to want to be seen as right was leading me to long-term fear of those things that I've mentioned earlier. And you know what? I also learned that if I wanted to take my life like the people do that are listening to this show, there would be no room for fear, self-sabotage, or isolation.
think the audio just blipped. Can you say what you just said one more time?
How far back do you want me to go?
About 30 seconds. About, okay. About fear, overcoming fear.
Sure. Okay, let me get there. Let me get there. Yeah, so I did what any schoolboy or school-aged child would do. I developed a way of coping with the pain and the insecurity. And what I did, I tricked myself, Phil, into believing that the only way that anyone would ever accept me is if I masked who I really was and proved my value, proved my worth, made it my mission to do so. And the unhealthy way that that came out of me is that I had to prove that I was right at all costs. You know, no mom and dad, I know better. No coach, I know better. No wife, I know better. No God, I got this, I know better. And it was pride. And I later learned, or I'm still learning, because we're all works in progress, right? That the short-term desire to be seen as right was leading me into long-term fear. Fear of those things that I've mentioned, failure, success, and not looking good. And I also realized or learned that if I wanted to get to another level, there was no room for fear, isolation, or self-sabotage.
So I totally agree that I think fear is one of the major things that keeps us from sometimes just even getting off the couch and moving toward a vision. But oh, yeah. Other times it's even as I was hearing Michael Hyatt talking today, that even successful entrepreneurs are afraid that they're not going to have what it's going to take when they pursue a vision. So what do we do with that fear? I mean, at one level it drives us, but another level it can do exactly what you said, become that person who insists on being right and destroys their relationships along the way, or puts on a mask to try to hide that fear, which can take a lot of energy. What mm-hmm. are your recommendations? What kinds of things have you done, and what do you see others doing that can help to dismantle that fear?
Remember, Phil, when I was standing in the alleyway? Who sure. was I with? Who was I with?
Remind me.
I was with my grandmother.
Right.
Remember that story?
Sure.
And what did I do with my sneakers? I took baby steps. And if you want to overcome anything in your life, fear also, you got to take baby steps. And you got to do something that scares you every day. Now, what may scare one person or be scary, I guess is a better way to look at it. What may be scary for one person may or may not be scary for the next person. So you've got to kind of fill in the blanks there, figure out what it is for you. But if you take a little step, a baby step, just like I was doing in the alley there, you're going to be able to get your footing and then take the next one. And it might be a little bit more of a stride. And then the next one. And it might be an even bigger stride. And then maybe even a leap every now and then. Here's the thing where I think a lot of people get into trouble. Is that they think that, okay, I just need to leap. You know, we've all heard that phrase, leap of faith, right? Well, there's a time and a place for that, probably. And it definitely sounds sexy to take a leap of faith. And it makes for good movies. But you know what? Sometimes you just got to put one foot in front of the other and take the step that you're willing to take. That's the key word, Phil, willing. Because, you know, we all know what to do, but the step that we take is the one that we're willing to take.
Yeah, it's true. Is that with anything in life, you know, you can't eat an elephant except for one bite at a time. You can't right. go a mile without taking one step at a time. Sometimes we make these challenges in our lives out to be a mountain and forget, you know what, all I need to do is go down this next 100-yard stretch. And if I just keep taking those 100-yard stretches, it's going to equal the ability to climb this mountain. So it's a great word of encouragement. We need to start small. Sometimes fear can be so stymieing that it can be like it was for me with this podcast, that it can cause me to focus my effort elsewhere and avoid it, you know, of I don't want to deal with it, so I'm going to focus my energy somewhere else.
Well, I'm a master at distraction. I could talk to you about, you know, weapons of mass distraction all day long.
So I guess another thing, though, then is I know you help people find their voice and find their sense of purpose. You know, we don't need to face every single fear that we have at every single moment. We can't. So how do you get clear on those places that you really do need to focus, and the demons that you need to slay, the mountains that you do need to climb? How do you encourage people that you work with and the guys listening here today on finding that purpose and that place that you need to be willing to fight till the death, to never give up on?
Sure. That's a very profound question. Absolutely profound. And you know what? It has an easy answer to it. And you start every single day with a two-chair conversation. One chair for you, one chair for God. That's how you do it. That's how you find your voice. That's how you find your purpose. Yeah, there's going to be some legwork, some grunt work on your part. Absolutely. Of course there is. But you know what? It all starts with asking God and having a conversation. But here's the thing, and boy, are us men terrible at this, at least I am. And that is that you got to listen. And that can be tough, really tough. My gosh, took me 30, 35 years till I figured that one out. But that's where it starts. And then you take baby steps with what you hear God say, or what you feel in your spirit, or what you write in your journal. Because after you have that conversation with God, that two-chair conversation, you know, you can spend 2, 3, maybe even 4 minutes kind of jotting down some thoughts. No grammar rules, no style errors, but just, you know, writing down, you know, what do you hear, or what do you feel, or what do you think God is saying to you? Because he is trying to use your noggin, what you have up here, and he's also trying to use what you have in your chest. You just got to give him the opportunity to. A good friend of mine, Bob Bodine, lives local to me, Dallas-Fort Worth area, wrote an amazing book called The Power of Who. And recently he wrote another book called Two Chairs, which is, it talks about the two chairs idea. And one of the things that Bob talks about is that God is there, willing. What you need to do is just set an appointment and be there too. Now, you and I, we had this on our calendar, right? To be here on this day at this time.
Right.
Right? Because you liked me, I liked you. We wanted to get together and talk a little bit, do a podcast. Well, if we would do that for people that we have a relationship, why wouldn't we do that with a God that we have a deeper relationship with? Set an appointment. Mm-hmm. And that was very, very meaningful when Bob kind of explained it a little bit in his book. Two Chairs, by the way, is the name of that book.
I love the picture. I mean, I've done that. My family has occasionally set a place for Jesus at the table to remind us that he's there with us, that's, you know, that sits empty. There's not a physical person there. But I love the idea of actually having a chair, whether it's mental or a literal physical chair across from you, to have a conversation. I know I've done that occasionally throughout my journey, and whenever I do it, it does make it more real, like I'm having a conversation with a person as opposed to a conversation with this, you know, entity that's somewhere else. But instead, remembering, you know, he's right here with me, he is for me, he's not going to leave that chair. For me, I can find lots of reasons, like you said, lots of distractions, reasons not to show up in the chair, but also, as you say, if you realize I'm meeting with a person, I made a commitment to be with them, I'm not going to cancel this. It's way too important to me because I respect this person and their time and their commitment to me. And God, of all people, deserves that from us. It's certainly not a thing of guilt, and he's going to show us grace. But I do think you're right. Treating it like that conversation is great. My question is, what questions are you asking? Like, what, you know, you got there, you're in this place, you're starting to say, what are you saying, God? But are there some specific questions that you found are important to be asking of yourself in that moment that help you discover this sense of purpose?
Sure. I really appreciate you bringing that up as well. One of the things that I do is I have more of a discussion. There are some certain affirmations that are laced with biblical facts and truths and even a scripture or two. These are things that I say to myself out loud. You know, New Age folks might call them affirmations or declarations or something. But these are things that I say to myself that are actually rooted in truth. So it's not, you know, I have $1 million. I have $1 million. I have $1 million. You know, it's much more deeper than that. And it includes some of God's words and Christ's words in there. And so that's part of the discussion that I have. And if there are questions that are on my heart, sure, I'll share them. But more importantly, I'll share kind of my thoughts on this, and I will be absolutely trusting and thankful. And I think that's really what God is looking for, a thankful and a grateful heart. And he will be able to use that as well. But of course, I do ask for guidance in that. You know what? Some amazing things have happened since I've been having my two-chair conversations. And let me kind of frame that up. I didn't hear thunder. You know, I didn't hear loud noises and flashes of light and all that, but some things have really started to fall in place for me. And I've gotten some new ideas, you know, for my speech content, for things that I'm going to do with my business that they weren't there before. And I give credit to the two chairs conversation. See, I'm making myself available. I'm showing up for my appointment. And I'm taking it as a serious appointment because it is. You know, if you had an appointment with a potential venture, a potential investor, a venture capitalist, and there was, you know, $500,000 on the line, or $1 million, or $5 million, just pick your figure, you would take that meeting serious. Well, God's got more than that guy does.
Absolutely.
And more ability than that venture capitalist would have. So why wouldn't you take it seriously?
Plus, he knows you inside and out. He knows exactly what you're good at, what your fears are that you need to overcome, how to steer you. He provides the counsel. And yet, what do? We tend to try to do things on our own, ignoring the infinite counsel that's available to us because we think we've got the resources and we don't have time. So I appreciate that reminder. And I think that's a great place to start. You mentioned that one of the things you do is rehearse words that Jesus has said that are important to you. I'm wondering if there is one or two verses that you found to be particularly useful for you as you try to orient your heart toward the purpose that God has given you.
Yeah, my second statement, we'll just call it an affirmation. I know I've kind of used that word in a New Age kind of context earlier, but we'll just call it an affirmation for the purposes of this conversation. The second one I say is about Jesus. And it's, you know, Jesus said to me that I can move this mountain from here into the ocean if I do not doubt. And Jesus also said to me that whatever I ask for in prayer, if I believe in my heart, that what I say will happen, it'll be done. You see how I did that? I kind of wove Jesus's words. That's what he said. And my favorite book says, God calls us by name. See, I didn't make that up. Jesus said, hey, Joel. But the book says he calls us by name. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me is he calls my name. If he knows the hairs on my head, he definitely knows my name. And he doesn't say, hey, you. He speaks to me personally.
Absolutely. That's good. That's good stuff.
Yep.
Couple more questions I'd like to ask before we end here. One other big one. I mentioned to you that I've been asking a lot of my guests about their moment when time stood still, a moment when they were maybe in the presence of great art or nature or in a relational context where all of a sudden nothing else mattered and it felt like God had caused time to literally stand still. Has there been a moment like that in your life? And if so, when was that?
Sure. That's a good one. I don't know if time stood still during this time, but let me tell you about something that happened. My wife and I, Pei, had two golden retrievers, Bubba and Jake. They were therapy dogs. And Jake has since gone, but we still have Bubba. But when we had both of those guys, one of our favorite things to do was to go on therapy visitation. And we worked in retirement homes with the blind and the visually impaired in the special needs communities. And one time we were working at this church, Irving Bible Church, and they were having an event for autistic kids and for their families. And when Pei, myself, and Bubba and Jake, our guys, walked into the gymnasium, this little boy, could have been more than 9 years old, took his mom by the hand and ran over to Pei and to Bubba. And this little boy was enthusiastic, but because of his autism, he was having difficulty coordinating what was going on up here in his noggin with his motor skills. So Pei, she's so much better than me, Pei took Preston by the hand and began showing him how to pet, how to caress, how to massage our dog, Bubba's back. And as she was going through the motions, she was saying his name softly, the dog's name, Bubba, Bubba, Bubba. And the people around us were paying attention to what was going on between Bubba, Pei, and Preston. And some of the comments, there was a comment that was made. It was something like, oh, don't worry, he can't talk. Or, yeah, Preston, he doesn't talk. Or, Preston, he won't talk. And then in those next few seconds, Preston uttered the first word that I ever heard him say. He said, Bubba! And Phil, in that moment, that little boy taught us all a lesson. He taught us that we all need to believe in the possibilities of the person that just didn't know any better. Hmm. And he didn't know any better. And he still was able to come through.
I love that. You're seeing a situation that feels impossible, like something can't change, and being reminded that God can step in even through an animal, even through an unexpected act, and bring about change in circumstances that you think are just permanently going to be that way. And he does that all the time. That's the miracle that he does. Like for you as a five-year-old boy, you're never going to walk. You're never going to be the same. And look at you now. You're teaching people, you know, you taught people physical therapy stuff. You taught them to swim and to fight. And now you teach them to believe in themselves. God's doing miracles. I love that story. Joel, I'm going to bring this to a close now, and I'd like for you to tell guys where they can learn about you, to find your book, what website would you direct them to, or where do they find about your show and the things that you're up to?
Sure. And Phil, thank you again for having me on today. Best place to go is relaunchshow.com/subscribe. And I included that slash subscribe in there because that's where you can go and you can subscribe to my podcast, Relaunch. We've been doing the show about 2.5 years. We're at 1.6 million downloads so far, about 533 episodes, and having a blast with it. And I'd like to sample the show and see if it's something that you can use in your faith walk to build your confidence, to build your determination, and also to build your success. And we've interviewed probably a lot of people that you know, actors, entertainers, people from the movie War Room, Facing the Giants, Fireproof, and we just a lot of familiar names. And if it's something that can be helpful to you, then I would consider it an honor and a privilege if you would subscribe to the podcast. You'll also be able to get to my website, of course, if you go there, and you and I can connect. And of course, all the social media icons are there. But really, what's more important than having another Twitter follower or another Facebook friend is to impact someone's life and to help them in their faith walk. And it's a privilege to have the opportunity to do that. May I share one more thing with the men?
I was going to actually ask you to share one closing thought. So before you do that, I just want to say thanks for being on the show. And now I'm going to give you the last word.
Well, thank you, Phil. I appreciate that. You know, a lot of things happened to me way back when. My parents were divorced when I was three. That's 2 years, you know, before the accident. And then that happened. And then there are many struggles in my school, in my career, in my marriage, in my business. But those things, while they were done to me, they were also done for me. And what I mean by that is every single thing, even the things that sucked, had to work in God's perfect order, in order for me to be here where I am today and for me to be at this place in my life. And no matter what you have been through or what you are going through, maybe, just maybe, ask God. Maybe those things were done for your benefit.
Well, there you have it, men. I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. It's an encouraging story listening to Joel, because when we face mountains in our lives, it's good to remember the ways that God has rescued others and come through for them, like rescuing a 5-year-old boy who, by all odds, should never have walked, possibly never lived, but he orchestrated the lives of people to donate blood so that Joel might live and tell the story today, some 4 decades later. I believe each one of us can look to God and know that He is for us much more than we possibly believe. Well, this has been episode 10. Episode number 10, you can find it at maninthepew.com/010. Would you do me a favor? Would you head over to iTunes and, if you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast and then also provide a rating and review? That will help us be discovered by other men who are looking for encouragement, inspiration, and challenge in their faith. Thanks for joining me today. Go change your world at work, at home, at church, and at play. God bless.